Welcome to the Smichael Speaks podcast channel. I'm Joanne Smichael, and I'm delighted that you tuned in for relevant leadership learning that will help you continue to soar. Enjoy this episode. The last case study I did was really popular, so much so that I'm doing another one today. Thank you to everyone who encourages me to try new topics, to continue with the things they enjoy, just to reach out to me and tell me what you're enjoying with the podcast and give me feedback. I am in a state of shock and amazement that these podcasts have had over 28,000 listeners, 28,000 globally. When I look at the heat map of where my podcasts are being played, I am in a state of shock, amazement, and gratitude to the good Lord, because who knew when I started doing this, I guess 4 years ago, that we would be here. So thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for listening and thank you for sharing. All right, here's another thought starter. This one is all about courage, internal opposition, and the nuances of DEI. Let's go. I'm going to read you the case study, and then I will review questions for you to consider at the end, questions that you can use as an individual, with a team, or with a work group. So here's how it goes. I'm going to read it to you. We knew that the board of directors wasn't going to like our report and the recommended action plan. We knew it was going to be threatening to many of them because the recommendations would dramatically alter the entire governance process, positions, and the power structures. It would create a transparency never seen in the 50-year history of this medical society. So let me just... Here's the backstory. I belong to a professional society of physicians in a relatively small subspecialty. It's become more and more apparent that the membership lacked ethnic and gender diversity, not to mention sexual identity and national origin. The board of directors was all male, all white, and all from the same group of research institutions. A female member of our society began raising the lack of diversity in conversations with members. She finally spoke directly to the chair of the board of directors. As a member, she had a right and a responsibility to do that. After a lot of coercion, he agreed to form a task force to address inclusion. Our task force was a great group. Different races, sexual identities, countries of origin, institutions, different subspecialties within the subspecialty. We actually modeled what we wanted to see in the society, in our professional association. The society invested in hiring a consultant to lead us through a one-year action planning process. They entered it saying that they knew the process would take more than a year and that they knew we'd need ongoing assistance and that they were committed to that. All of that was a big old lie when we gave them our report. Now, here's a nutshell of the most notable findings. One, members of color were not renewing their membership in the society, but they were active in other associations and other professional societies. Two, the board pipeline was homogenous because the governance model didn't allow for open elections to office. People ascended into roles. Three, the committee structure was more like a clique than a professional organization. Committee chairs were appointed by the board chair, and committee members were appointed by him and the committee chairs. Yeah, picture that. And the fourth notable finding was that the same 12 people presented at every annual meeting and every scientific meeting. Yeah, there were other presenters, but always these same 12. Let me give you a nutshell of the action items we proposed. One, that the governance model and the bylaws be completely overhauled to create transparency and inclusion and to create more relevant contemporary, I don't know what the word is, more relevant contemporary best practices, governance and bylaws. Two, our task force needed to be funded for 3 more years to oversee the implementation of our recommendations. 3, that our annual meeting and other events intentionally solicit proposals from a wider audience. 4, that the selection committee members for abstracts and other presentation opportunities have term limits, allow members to volunteer to serve, and be outside of the control of the board chair. 5, that there be limits on consecutive annual meeting presentations to create space for other researchers to build their reputations and educate us about their research and their work. 6, that there be greater oversight of the association management company employed by the society. They work for us, we don't work for them. 7, that there be an intentional effort to highlight research on underserved communities at every meeting. Healthcare disparities are real, and we felt that there needs to be an intentional effort to explore that. 8, that our marketing and public relations materials be overhauled to reflect the vast diversity of our patients and of our members. And 9, that we query members and former members on what it would take to create greater inclusion in the society. When we met with the board to present these recommendations, there was subtle hostility from some of the board members. Other board members looked like they were bored out of their minds. A few did look genuinely interested. We didn't expect them to immediately commit to anything, but we also didn't expect them to commit to absolutely nothing and defund the task force, because that's what they did. They defunded the task force. Some members of the task force decided not to be members of the society anymore. They had had it. Others, well, one or two, say that there's hope for change and we have to be patient. I decided to have a conversation with the board chair and the chair-elect. I told them that the board's actions were demoralizing and that the organization is probably going to stay exactly as it is, which means it's falling behind. They tried to pacify me by saying that change takes time and that our recommendations were too radical. They also said that the task force members didn't understand the nuances of governance, bylaws, and other elements of board work. They were patronizing, they were condescending, and not one bit interested in change. I've decided I'm not going to be a member of the society any longer. There are other societies and associations and academies that I can belong to that support my values around inclusion, diversity, and equity. And I am very glad that I had the conversation with the society's leaders, because I know, without a doubt, exactly where they stand. So, you've heard the case study. Now, giving you 7 questions for discussion and consideration. First one is, what were your thoughts as you heard the case? Next question, second question, was there anything familiar to you? Third, what are the issues in the case? Fourth, what are the root causes of the issues in the case? 5th, what courageous actions would you have taken and why would you take those actions? 6th, what would you do if your courageous actions produced absolutely no change? And 7th, what's the advice that you would give? This case study and any of the case studies that we use on the podcast channel are intended to get you thinking and also to give you some tools for action. They're also intended to give you something interesting to do in staff meetings, to spend some time going over cases and sharing diverse perspectives and thinking about action, thinking about specific action that could be taken. So, share the case studies. Use them. think about them. And thank you for listening to this one. I hope that it prompts some ideas about courage in the face of DEI struggles and challenges. Thanks. Thanks, thanks, thanks. Stay well. Thanks for listening to this podcast. I hope you got tools that you'll actually use and share. Subscribe if you haven't already. I add new and relevant leadership learning all of the time. If you haven't visited the Smichael Speaks YouTube channel, check it out. There's all sorts of new content. All of this is virtual leadership learning that will help you soar.